Tax day is coming.
Oh, no.
But if you sign up for Robinhood Gold's IRA with a 3% match, you can get up to $195 for the 2023 tax year.
Oh, yeah.
Sign up at Robinhood.com/boost by tax day to get the biggest contribution match on the market. Subscription fees apply. You know you got the
most. Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Robinhood Financial, LLC, member SIPC.
All right, it is time to talk about the Kineon Move Plus red light therapy device. I have been looking for a solution to help me recover faster and reduce joint pain. At 50, I have osteoarthritis, I've had 3 knee surgeries, and a dislocated hip. I'll take all the help I can get. And since using the Move Plus, I've noticed significant improvements in my mobility and overall well-being. I simply feel better and move better. I'd highly recommend this product to any middle-aged man or anyone in general who is looking to take their health and wellness to the next level. Head on over to Kineon, kineon.io/midlifemale. Use the code midlifemale and you're going to save 10% on your Kineon Move Plus. Check it out. Hey guys, Greg Scheinman here. Welcome to the Midlife Male podcast, where we dive deep into the minds of remarkable individuals who have cracked the code to success in the midst of life's grandest challenges. Today, I've got an absolute titan joining us, a man who personifies resilience, expertise, and an unwavering commitment to unlocking human potential. And don't worry, because neither you nor I nor Adam Bornstein can screw this up. That is literally the title of his brand new book. I am so excited to share this conversation and this book with you. It is called You Can't Screw This Up: Why Eating Takeout, Enjoying Dessert, and Taking the Stress Out of Dieting Leads to Weight Loss That Lasts. So when it comes to deciphering the complex tapestry of health, wellness, and personal growth, Adam stands head and shoulders above the crowd. I have been following his content for a long time now, and he is a true visionary. He is real. He is credible. He is relatable. He is authentic, and he has dedicated his life to unraveling the mysteries of the human body and mind with a special focus on empowering men to optimize their physical and mental well-being during this pivotal stage of life that we call midlife. He has worked with Tim Ferriss, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and is an acclaimed New York Times best-selling author, a renowned speaker, and sought-after consultant and coach. His work has graced the pages of publications such as Men's Health, ESPN, The Huffington Post, and he has solidified his position as a trusted voice in the realm of fitness, nutrition, and personal development. But what truly sets Adam apart is his profound understanding of the unique challenges faced by men as they navigate the tumultuous waters of midlife. And he's armed with an arsenal of practical strategies that helps men not only reclaim their vitality, but also rediscover their sense of purpose, igniting a fire within them that propels them to newfound heights. I was truly inspired during our conversation, mostly because of how real and how simple and how smart, approachable his entire process and demeanor really is. So we've got the distinct privilege right now of delving into Adam's vast reservoir of wisdom as he shares with us his insights on how taking the stress out of dieting leads to weight loss that lasts. I subscribe to pretty much everything Adam is talking about on this episode, as it makes sense for and will work for anyone at any age or stage of life. So here we go. Let's get into it with Adam Bornstein on this week's episode of the Midlife Male Podcast. Adam Bornstein here today. Thank you so much. Welcome.
Greg, thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I just said this, and I need to, it's staring me in the face. It's the title of your new book. It says, "You can't screw this up." So I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now.
That's the idea. You should be like, this is peak confidence. And the hope is actually it only escalates even more from here.
Absolutely. Let's just start there for one second. I got a lot of ground to cover, but you can't screw this up. What a great title.
Thank you.
What was the impetus? Where did this come from?
It wasn't initially the title of the book. And I don't know if my publisher wants me to say this or not, but I am an open book here. I had to fight for it a little bit. It didn't occur to me immediately. I didn't come out the gates saying like, this is what I want the book to be titled. It came out of the people who were on the test program for this book. So I've learned a lot of things over the years. I've been writing books for 15 years now. And in that time, some of the earlier mistakes I made in writing books was A, not having people read the book before it was done, just because like sometimes things don't make sense. And other times you realize that you kind of missed the target. Like you had the right thing in the crosshairs, right? And then like it just moved and you just missed the target, and that sucks. And the only way to know is that let people read. And then two, let people do the program that you're going to share in the book, right? Make sure that it is very, very intuitive. Make sure that it is easy to follow. You can't screw it up. And identify where people have friction, because the goal of doing this, if you're going to do it well, is that people's lives should be changed, and not just for the short term, but for the long term. Right? That's it. And for me, if I can't do something that is going to long-term impact people, shouldn't fucking do it at all. So I'm doing this with 500 people because you need a lot of people. And the goal of this book really was about creating a sustainable and practical guide to healthy living in an environment that fundamentally fights against us to make us less healthy, right? That is the environment which we live in. The food environment is not stacked in our behavior. And I'm giving people all these plans, and I'm there in a Slack group, giving them weekly advice, guidance, asking their questions. And even the people who are having success, arguably the people who are having the most success, kept on saying the same thing in these chat threads or in DMs to me. And they're like, I'm going to screw this up. I'm going to mess this up. Like, I know this is going to happen. It always happens. And it became clear to me a few things. One, there's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy that most people have tried, had a little bit of success, and then failed, right? It's not that we don't know how to lose weight or build some muscle. We struggle to do it long-term. And it was just right in front of me. We're like, it's almost like the whole group was like punking me, trying to tell me like what this should be doing. Like, I'm going to screw this up. And what would change things for people is when I would say, you can't screw this up. And at first they were like, Adam, like, stop messing with me, right? And I'm like, no. You think that these things that you are doing, right, when you have a little bit of sugar, when you miss a workout, when you don't get enough vegetables, you think that these things are the missteps. And what's happening is you are internalizing this stress, this guilt, this shame. And from that, from those emotions, you are either A, saying fuck it and stopping completely because you think you screwed up, or B, you are trying so hard to compensate for these perceived mistakes. And it is that compensation that is sending you down a very, very bad path that is going to leave you much worse off. And the principle, which was why I wrote this book in the first place, was like trying to help people understand how to sustain healthier habits, was that we live in a wellness environment that tells us all these different ways that we are going to screw up, when in reality, our bodies, our minds are much more resilient. And if we just acted like some of these things were planned bumps in the road rather than these massive screw-ups, and we just kept on the path rather than acting like we needed to blaze a new path or buy a new car to drive down this road, we would be much better off. So the goal was teaching people to know when they really screw up, which is much more damaging behaviors than you've been taught, and B, telling you how to stay on that path to be healthier. And when that happens, when people stop thinking they screwed up, and when they are given a path that is hard to screw up, right? It's easier to succeed. The success is undeniable.
Mm, so good. And like the immediate passion, like just kind of like comes through the screen, comes out of your mouth, comes through the screen, like there. If I could back up a little bit into your background, you know, and how you got your start and how you got interested even in doing what you're doing now and the path that you got here, because now you speak so fluidly about it. You have been writing books for 15 years. You've got an incredible background. And at the same time, like, very normal, like very natural, like, you know, in versus a lot of times what you're talking about, what you see out there perpetuating information on nutrition, you know, and and fitness, you know, and you touch on a little bit that whole over-indexing trap that I like to call it, where it looks so extreme.
Right.
And it has to be so perfect. And the messenger has to be also so perfect and all. And it just seems kind of unattainable. And certainly unsustainable. So I'm really curious about your background and your personal evolution into getting where you're at right now.
Yeah. I mean, how far back do you want to go?
I guess that's a great question for you. Like, where would you pick to start, I guess?
I'll give the very, very short end of it, which was overweight growing up. I think a lot of people who are in fitness are two things. They just fall in love with it and they just love it from the jump. Or they struggle with it, find a way through it, and then they want to help others because they know how frustrating it is. I'm the latter. I'm the guy who was overweight growing up, couldn't figure it out. I remember getting bar mitzvah and there were no pants for man, yay short and yay wide, right? That was kind of my MO, just like, you know, you kind of live in the shame and guilt. And I grew up like telling people I was allergic with chlorine and that's why I had to like swim with a shirt on, which makes no sense because I'm still on the chlorine. But when you're like 14, 15 years old, these things seem to make sense. Sure, the shirt protects you. So that was my background. Like the ability to empathize with people and struggle being healthy was something that I implicitly understood growing up. I think the inflection points, there are a couple of them. One, in high school, I broke my back twice. And the second time I broke my back, all of the doctors were essentially like, you're going to have to live a sedentary life. You can't do all these things that you like. Because at this point, I had started to become more athletic. I started to exercise, but not really seriously. I just realized that I didn't necessarily have to be trapped in this body that I thought I was trapped in. And, you know, I break my back and I end up getting like really sick as well with a disease that I've still battled like to this day, which is this like undiagnosable inflammatory disease. I'm like a 101 with this thing. And my future is kind of plotted out in a very negative way. And, you know, you have two choices, right? This is the fork in the road. You just accept that reality or you create your own. And I decided to create my own. I became fascinated with the human body. I wanted to not heal myself in the terms of like, I'm going to take these herbs and elixirs. I wanted to heal myself with science. I wanted to understand how I could exercise. I wanted to understand how I could eat. And even to this day, when I look at what I did to make myself better, it was nothing crazy, right? It was about mastering the basics. So that was one inflection point. The other inflection point was I eventually down the road, you know, I don't initially pursue health and fitness. I pursue psychology initially. So human behavior is at my core of interest. And I think for a while, I kind of cursed going down that road. And now I'm so thankful because it helps me understand people. And I eventually diverted and wanted to go into journalism. And then that eventually led me to being fitness editor at Men's Health. And I had this assignment where I was supposed to get like shredded for the magazine, right? And the first instinct is like, let's like go all out. Let's do all the coolest shit. And then there was like this twinge of guilt of being like, that makes a cool story, but how helpful is it for the average guy to show them all these things that they could do, but probably never will do, either because they don't have the access, they don't have the money. And I was like, what if I go ahead and try and get shredded, but eat dessert every week and, you know, do normal things and still bust my ass. And I was nervous as all hell because I like didn't even think it was going to work, right? But I didn't want to contribute. I didn't want to be part of the problem. I want to be part of the solution. Because at that point, I felt that there was enough wild, crazy shit that shows you what could be done, right? And at this point, I'm interviewing all the biggest actors and athletes in the world, you name it. My first big interview ever was with David Beckham, 2008 at Men's Health, right? Like, I'm like with like the elite. And I see what you can do, but I'm also like, it's a cool story, but it's not so helpful. And in doing that story, and I got pretty damn lean and I was in the magazine shirtless, it was just this moment of like, wow, the things that we think we need to do. And I'm not talking about being an elite athlete. I'm not talking about being a professional athlete. I'm talking about being healthy, fit, looking good, naked, having the energy, living longer. The things that we think we need to do. And more importantly, the things that we need think we need to sacrifice are very much misaligned. And the things that we tell people they need to start with are fundamentally backwards. And those things led me on this like long journey of like, how do you go ahead and help people become healthier while taking a practical approach? And then I realized that I was kind of like at some point, almost the problem myself. I've written books, as I said, for 15 years, and I had a long stretch where I was writing a lot. 2013, I write a New York Times bestseller. A year later, I have an idea for another book, which is like why we all struggle with these healthy habits, not what it takes to be healthy, but why we struggle to sustain. And that book is this book. And it took me 9 freaking years to figure out because it's very, very complicated.
Mm. It's so interesting and so much jumps out here. And thank you for sharing all that. You'd mentioned something, and I jotted a quick note as you were saying that the things that we're told to start with are fundamentally backwards, you know, often. What are some of those things? Because I get that all the time. You know, where should I start? Like with almost almost anything, you know. Or I get the why, Adam. Like why I should be in better shape, and why I want to live longer, and why I want to be a better husband, and why I want to be a better father, and be able to do this. Where I'm struggling is I'm struggling with how, and I don't know where to start. And then people get hung up on the when to start, as if there is some perfect time. And I would love for you to, since you mentioned it, like, what's fundamentally, what do we have backwards?
Yeah. So I'll start with a simple analogy to help people understand. If you were to take any other discipline, right? We believe in progressing people. You start with math. You don't begin them with calculus and geometry. We begin with addition and subtraction. If I were to teach you how to swim, I wouldn't like throw you in the deep end. Well, I mean, if you want to drown someone, you would, right? You would start them in the shallow end. You might even like dip your toe in the water to be like, the water isn't scary, right? In wellness, though, not only do we jump people into the deep end, right? We like cut their arm open, leave them bleeding, and throw some sharks in there. We give them very, very complicated tasks, and we give them lots of them because so many people look at what they are doing now and not where they began, right? It's the curse of knowledge, right? If someone asked me, like, Adam, what do you do? I want to do what you do. It's like the worst thing I could tell someone if they're starting out because I started taking care of myself seriously when I was 16 or 15, when I broke my back, and 16 when I got diagnosed with this thing, and I figured things out significantly when I was 18, and I stopped trying to like be perfect with everything when I was 27, and then just started making adjustments. But so many of these books, and not all of them, but so many of these books and so many of these experts have actually wonderful advice, but it is terrible advice for the beginner because they do not have habits built. They have not mastered the foundational principles that they can then layer on. Everyone wants to push outside their comfort zone. And I talk about this. The book was originally at one point going to be called The Comfort Zone because I want people to understand that what we think the comfort zone is not actually what we need, right? It is this mix of we have to pursue a little bit of discomfort, but we can't become so uncomfortable that we're in an environment that we are going to fail, right? This is based on the Yerkes-Dodson curve, which is this beautiful, like inverted U-shaped curve that shows like how much anxiety and stress you can be in to thrive from a performance or behavioral standpoint. If you don't have any anxiety or arousal, right? So like you're just not challenged at all. You're not going to thrive, right? You're going to keep doing the stuff you do that isn't serving you. If you have too much, it's going to crush you. And this is what usually happens in wellness, right? We all go rah, rah, big goals, super extreme. I'm going to fast. I'm going to cold plunge. I'm going to sauna. I'm going to eat 5 meals a day. I'm going to count all my macros. I'm going to measure my inflammation. I got my CGM on them. And I'm not saying all these are bad things. That's where people get caught up. I'm saying if you are trying to become healthier, starting with all of those things when you don't even know what makes you feel better, is so stressful. Like you're looking at numbers you don't even understand and you are stressed out of your mind. And then when you get stressed, your behaviors get thrown off. When your behaviors get thrown off, you get shame and guilt. And the more shame and guilt you have, the worse your behaviors get. So what I am saying is that like all of these things try to show you the cool, neat, shiny object that sounds so cool, right? Oh my God, fasting is going to be so great. But man, if you don't know how to get protein and fiber in your diet, if you don't know how to have a 20 to 30 minute meal, because if you eat quicker than that, you're going to be hungry, because our satiety system, what allows us to feel full, takes 20 to 30 minutes. Most people don't realize that they usually feel like, I'm hungry. I'm like, it's because us as Americans, we eat too fast. I did this with a group of 500 people. The average person took 8 minutes to eat their meal. 8 freaking minutes. We live in a society where we're scarfing this stuff down. And then at the same time, they're scrolling on their phone or they're watching TV and they're not paying attention. We don't understand that sensory information, the things that we see through our eyes, when we look at our meal and see what's there, that actually helps us feel full. When we slow down and process, that helps us feel more satisfied. When we take more time, our body has that 20 minutes where the signal that is in your stomach, it sends a neurochemical signal to your brain saying, hey, I'm full, but it takes 20 minutes. Digestion isn't that rapid. But when we start looking at, like, well, do you understand what foods you can eat that make you feel more satisfied? Because when we lose weight, here's what happens. It's a motherfucker. When we lose weight, our body adjusts and it makes you hungrier. That's just the way it is. Our body craves homeostasis. Even if it's the best thing for you, your body weight goes down, your hunger hormones change, and your hunger goes up, right? Knowing this, there are certain things that you can eat, and this doesn't mean cutting out everything that you love. There are certain things that you can eat that can work with your brain so that you stay fuller longer. So some of those foundational habits are just understanding what are the foods that are going to make you most satisfied. Understanding that you need to slow down your eating pace to give your body a chance to lose weight in a way that you're not starving all the time, right? It's understanding principles of sleep that will fundamentally fight against you. It's understanding that even setting a schedule for when you eat, and this could be intermittent fasting, it doesn't have to be. I think a lot of the intermittent fasting claims are overblown, but the construct of intermittent fasting, as in a start time and a stop time of eating, is good, because think about work, right? We live in a now overstressed work environment, partially because there's no start and stop time, right? In the old 9 to 5, there was good and bad of that. But a beautiful thing was, like, 5 o'clock, people came home. I remember my dad coming home, and like, there was no work after when he got home. He got like closer to 7. My dad was a worker, right? He would get after it, but he was done. We come home, we're work. No wonder why we're stressed. Food is kind of the same thing. If you don't create a boundary of when you're going to start eating and when you're going to stop eating, and I don't care about the fucking time, right? That's overblown. I do not care. But there should be like a kitchen open, kitchen closed. And that construct itself of, I'm going to have a discipline of when I'm going to eat during the day and when I'm not, is going to serve you very well, no matter whether, like, it could be the kitchen closes at 11 o'clock at night. I don't care. But if it's 12:30 at night and you're up, you aren't eating food because you have created boundaries that make it easier for you to be healthy. So my job is to help people understand the foundational principles that if they did nothing else, if they never counted a calorie, if they never bought into any of the different dieting methods, they would do these things and they would see changes happen. And at any time and space, throughout time and space, as we age, those things would serve our minds, they would serve our bodies, and we would be confident that we were on the right path. And from those foundations, we could build on other things that might serve our goals, whether it's some of the more extreme behaviors, whether it's doing things more frequently, because we have mastered those foundations and made them so rock solid that, you know, they're as hard to break as brushing your teeth, right? Brushing your teeth is a habit, but like, most of us don't struggle with brushing our teeth because we've just found what works. We understand the other side of it, and we've built it into a habit loop that it works for us. And that's what so much of this book is about building those habit loops, creating those foundations, and then teaching you how to layer on regardless of what your dietary preference is. And that's the beauty. This can work for whether you are vegan or carnivore. I have my own preferences, but I'm not here to preach the gospel of what works for you or what you believe in. I am here to show you why so often so many different diet plans that are, you know, so different in nature all seem to struggle, because we're still throwing people in the deep end when it's time to, you know, put your foot in the shallow end and learn how to tread water. And then I can teach you all the strokes on how to swim.
Hey guys, Greg here. I am committed to living a healthy and active lifestyle in my 50s. I'm actually committed to living a healthy lifestyle for as long as I am living, and I intend to be here for a very long time. And you know what makes me happy? Bubs Naturals makes me happy, and they are an integral part of my daily routine. Their collagen protein powder has helped me maintain strong and healthy joints. The MCT oil powder has supported my energy levels and mental clarity. And their coffee is flat out delicious and has become a staple in my morning routine. I am grateful for the high quality ingredients, the impressive benefits that Bubs Naturals products provide, and I highly recommend them to anyone out there looking to maximize their health and wellness in midlife or at any other age, stage, or time of life. Just head over to bubsnaturals.com, use promo code MidwifeMail. You will save 20%. Pick up all of their products. A few rapid fire questions in the midst of all this, because as you're dropping all of this knowledge, and I'm like, I'm not going to repeat any of it because you just said it better than I ever could. And I believe everything you said. I'm like, this fucking guy, I'm like, boom, spot on. love this guy. Great. Send this to everybody who just reaches out to me. Go buy this book. But few things also that I'm always just curious in. Where do you grow up?
Grew up in Chicago, outside of Chicago, northern suburbs. If I say Chicago, the true Chicagoans would be like, "What part of the city are you from?" I'm like, "All right, technically Northbrook, Illinois, northern suburbs, a little bit outside the city, but yeah, northern suburbs of Chicago."
Okay, I actually just got back from Chicago. Love that city.
Great city. A little too much murder vibes going on right now, but otherwise, wonderful, wonderful city.
Yes, where I was walking around, it was beautiful. Happened to just start walking from my hotel and ended up doing 10 miles, just walking around everywhere. And it was awesome.
It is such a fantastic city. I love Chicago.
Where do you go to school?
I went to the University of Colorado. You'd see behind me, there's lots of CU stuff. There's a buffalo right there. I am a diehard University of Colorado fan, which means for the last 15 years, I've gone to a lot of football games where we have lost. But in Deion Sanders, I now trust.
Congratulations. I saw that. I was going to ask you there. The next room is my 19-year-old son from where I'm sitting, who's home from CU. He just finished his freshman year at Leeds. So we have been spending a lot of time in Colorado.
Love Boulder. Love Boulder. Absolutely. That city has my heart.
There you go. So where are you now?
I'm in Denver.
You're in Denver. Okay. How long have you been in Denver?
Been in Denver for, this will be year number 9. So I lived out here when I went to college, obviously. I left and I bounced around a little bit of everywhere. I went where my career took me, and then where I had the choice to pick where I wanted to live. We ended up here.
Very nice. Okay. How old are you?
I'm 40.
Okay. Turn the corner. Family. I see photos.
I have 2 kids. I have a boy who is 7, will be 8 later this year. And then another son who is 4, almost 5, will be 5 next month.
Amazing. Okay. 40. Any difference to you? Tipping point? What did you think heading into 40? Care, didn't care, whatever.
I have moments where I'm like talking about other contemporaries and they're being like, "Oh, I'm 47. And I'm like, "Oh shit, I'm not that far away." Or, "Oh, I'm like 51. I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'm like a decade away from that." Like, I think I don't associate myself with my decade. For whatever reason, like 30 was always a scary age for me. And then I turned 30 and I realized that like life just started getting a lot better. And, you know, it's interesting. For a long time, I have a lot of different jobs, I would say, right? I have 3 different businesses, I guess 4 now, building one with the amazing Arnold Schwarzenegger as we speak. And I used to manage everything for Tim Ferriss, his podcast, newsletter, social media, you name it. So I managed the podcast for a lot of time. So I got to hear a lot of amazing, amazing interviews because I was producer. It was my job to listen and make it great and cut them up and do all of that. And, you know, it's an interview that a lot of people reference is the Jamie Foxx interview, the first time that he did this, which is many years ago now. And he's got this wonderful line where he's like, "What's on the other side of fear?" And he goes, "Nothing." Right. And we build up so many of these things. And I really took that to heart. And I've taken that to heart in life that we build up a lot of these things, right? It's not the negative emotions that are a problem. It's very funny. So we do a daily newsletter for Arnold called Arnold's Pump Club and put that thing together every single day, Monday through Friday. And there's an item that's going to go out later this week all about, you know, how people deal with negativity. And what the study found, it's like, it's not our negative thoughts that are the problem, very much like, you know, you can't screw this up, like the book. It is our reaction to those thoughts that truly cause all of the problems and are associated with less longevity, more stress, more guilt, more anxiety, more health problems. So a lot of times it's just, you don't even need to be positive about the negative emotions. You just need to be neutral about it. You can't beat yourself up about these things. And I think it's natural for us to all have insecurities and questions of like, is this what I thought life would be like? Should I be doing more? Am I a good enough father? Do I make enough money? Am I healthy enough? Am I a good enough son or daughter to my parents? Like, part of being human is looking at different things that are an indication of where you are in your life and questioning it. That is human. What is not okay is then beating yourself up for having those thoughts, thinking that you're on the wrong track, not just allowing yourself to feel. And I've learned from that. So yeah, I'm a human. I'll have thoughts sometimes where I sit there and be like, oh my God, I'm 40. Have I lived half of my life, right? Am I a good enough father? Am I a good enough husband? You know, have I had enough success? Like I'm human. I have these questions. What I'm really good at is just being like, yeah, I'm going to sit in these. I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to feel bad about it. And what happens, emotions are actually very fleeting. Emotions are very short-lived. It's our internalization of the emotions that last for a long time. So if we can learn to be okay with not being okay, it helps us so much just get out of it. That's a long-winded answer to your question, but it's something that I think about quite a bit because I have a lot less fear and anxiety than I did even like a decade ago, even though I'm now a decade older. And it's because I think that I don't find these things to be unnatural or problemsome. I think it's just a sign that I care and that I want to be making the most of this life.
Mm. Does it have anything also to do with fear? Let's say, you know, getting to a place of fear, what's on the other side? Nothing. But does it also have something to do with the experience that you've accumulated and experiences that you've accumulated and maybe even to an effect of like, kind of how you define success or what success, you know, looks like for you and for your family. So maybe you're not, or I'm not, you know, chasing, you know, as much like in those areas.
Definitely. And like, let's say like some of it comes from a position of privilege, right? I'm doing well for myself. But I've been in positions where even not that long ago, lost a lot, close to lost it all a couple times. And I'd love to say that, you know, confidence equals evidence, or evidence equals confidence, and confidence equals results, right? And what I mean by that is evidence equals confidence. And a lot of times it's very easy for us to be like, oh, easy for you to say, I can't do X, Y, and Z. But in life, there are evidence all the time of that your ability to succeed, maybe not at the scale that you hope to. But no one just has like an overnight success, right? We all are climbing this mountain. I've been talking to people about this book. This was a 9-year process. People were like, oh, a book. I'm like, this thing took me 9 years. In 2017, you guys, I wrote the proposal and I sent it to my agent and he told me it was terrible. And like looking back, it was. And this is after my best-selling book ever. Right? He told me it was terrible. And he wasn't being mean. He was being honest. And, you know, I could have been like, I can't write another book. I'm a one-hit wonder, like all these different things. But like there was enough track record of like, I have done things where I've succeeded in. I have done things that I know that they're good. They were not at the level that I wanted, but I sit on those boulders, on those springboards to know of what I am capable of. And just because there is failure does not mean that there will not be eventually success. And so if you are willing to look for it, there is evidence everywhere that you can succeed, but you have to be willing to see it. And I talk about this all the time with like diet. There are evidence of people succeeding before the scale changes and people will quit because the scale doesn't change. But the scale is not the indicator, right? That's like the end goal. It's not the process goal. Like it takes time sometimes for the scale to change, but if you master the process, the scale will change. It will. And then the other part, like you said, is that without a doubt, you know, what does success look like for you? Right? Success for me is enjoying what I'm doing every day. And that doesn't mean it always going my way. Like it is hell in a handbag right now. Our nanny left months ago. I am playing the role of daddy and nanny and running businesses because my wife's a therapist. She can't do work with kids around. It's kind of unethical. So I have to take that on because I got to support my wife in her career. I haven't had a day off in 6-8 months, truly. Not a day off. And it's been hard, man. It has been really, really hard. And my dad is sick and my father-in-law passed away. And it has been just, man, I can't even tell you. It's been really difficult. But I enjoy what I do. I enjoy what I'm pursuing. I believe what I'm going after. My North Star is my wife happy? Are my kids happy? Can we eat? My wife's North Star, a little bit different. She wants a few pretty shiny things in there. She'll be the first one to tell you that. But she is the most amazing, you know, wife, mother, and she is my ride or die. But my North Star is very, very simple. right? And because of that, even when things are tough, I can be very, very fulfilled, because that doesn't mean I don't have ambition. It doesn't mean that I don't want to achieve all these things. I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be writing a book. I wouldn't be starting a business. I wouldn't be doing all of these things if I didn't want to accomplish great things. But if I don't accomplish those things, I do not see myself as a failure, because I have what I want right now. And that doesn't mean I'm complacent. It means I'm happy. And being happy and working from a place of happiness is a competitive advantage, because then all I got to do is protect that thing that I don't want to lose, right? The happiness of the wife, the happiness of my children. And if anything is affecting that, I know how to course correct. And then I can grind and pursue everything else, right? So I can pursue everything else, and I can, it is, my life is not balanced right now. But if it's gone too far, if my wife is just feeling like I'm not there enough, if my kids are like telling me they're sad or they miss me, I know what I have to leave behind, because I know what is most important. And I think that's the struggle that a lot of us have, is we see all these opportunities, we see all the ambition, we see the things that we want to do for ourselves, and we look at all of it and it's like, shit, how do I do all of this? And the reason it feels hard is because you don't know the thing that you want to protect the most, right? Again, no different than diet. How do you create a stable foundation? Is you just got to make the hard decisions and decide what is most important to you and what does that happiness look like, and learn to appreciate it. Like, gratitude is such a simple concept, but such a difficult one, because there's always going to be more. There's always these bright, shiny things that we want, but we can't let that pull us away from what we need.
Hey guys, Greg here. I am proud to partner with Hone Health. They are my provider for TRT. I believe in the team, the service, the product, and the mission. I am an open book. Feel free to email me, greg@midlifemail.com. You can ask me questions, and I am happy to get back to you and answer. This was a careful and personal decision that I made along with my primary care physician and my family. I believe in what Hone is doing every day, what they've done for me, and what they can do for other midlife males to help them live better, stronger, healthier, and happier lives. So if this is something that you are thinking about, I encourage you to learn more about Hone Health. Go over to honehealth.com/midlife male. You can order your at-home test and consultation and save $15. I think you hit on pretty much all five of the rules in the midlife male operating system. You know, number one, knowing what's important is what's most important. And that was, you know, so great. If you don't know where you're going, you're never gonna get there. You know, to what you talk about, even in your book and in your work, what I call, you know, aggregate, curate, and eliminate. There's so much noise out there and so much information or misinformation. You can aggregate it all. We've all had, I've had 200 plus conversations. You've had thousands of conversations. You've listened to them. You've produced them. You've interviewed on them. And then we got to curate it down, you know, to what works for us, and eliminate the shit that doesn't. Mm-hmm. And you talk about running four businesses, and this is really, I really appreciate the fact that you know, there's a 9-year window that it took you to write this book. And I think often that's overlooked by people, what it takes to go through these processes. But you also touched on what happens during those 9 years that you have four businesses to run. Because I've been asked this too, like, oh, you wrote a book, you do this, like, what did you do all day to like keep the lights on or this, that? And they don't realize sometimes how many other balls are in the air, which gets us to, you know, look, what's on your calendar? You know, what are you doing all day with your time? And to your point, if I end up over-indexing somewhere, my wife, my kids are, what's going to bring me back? You know, I know how to course correct. Let me look and figure out how much is too much.
Mm-hmm. I did that, you guys. What on the surface, the glitziest, most glamorous thing I did was start a company with LeBron James, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Cindy Crawford, and Lindsey Vonn. Started Ladder. I was a founding member. Mm-hmm. All of the products I created, and I was chief content officer. And like, you see me among these names that I have, you know, arguably no business being around. I'm very confident in my abilities, but like, these are iconic individuals and, you know, masters of their craft, all four of them, right? But what people don't see is that in order to do that job, I had to travel every single week, 3 days per week for 2 entire years. And this also overlapped when my second born came around. And it forced me to make changes in the business in order to sustain my other businesses. But it also ultimately ended up meaning I was making less money than at any point I had made in a long time, because I was very much vested in the equity of the company. I was playing the long game of that company. And, you know, there was a big sacrifice in a lot of ways, monetarily, certainly. But when the dust settled, the damage that it did to my family was tremendous, that I had to stop traveling. This like dream role was tearing apart the roots of my family. And when my wife made it clear, and then my older son made it very clear, and he came home at the end of the school year and got to bring home all his art home, and all these pictures are about how he misses daddy and he never sees daddy. And you have to understand, with my olders, because for myself, I was there for everything. I was there for every doctor's appointment. I woke up every morning, I'm an early riser. I put him to bed every single night. And then I missed so much of that. And then I missed it with my youngest. And it was a sober pill. It was, if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't do it like that. Because I did. I jeopardized the things that I was supposed to be protecting. And I was lucky enough that, you know, me and my wife communicated that I could go back and fix it. But also that meant showing what was most important. It meant stop traveling. It meant letting go of this thing that felt like my baby, but it wasn't my prize. It wasn't. It's just another one of those bright, shiny objects. So people look at that and it's like, oh, you did this and this with all these like big name people. I'm like, I did. And I learned a lot. And I was willing to give up too much to pursue that. And it wasn't worth it. And, you know, I'm here now. I'm able to talk about these things. I'm in a stable position, because when I saw what the sacrifice was sacrificing, I actually stayed true to my word. And I made the necessary adjustments to be there for my family, to be there for my wife, to be there for my kids, and then figure out the next thing that would fulfill me, because like none of it matters if those aren't in place. None of those matter if they're not happy, right? Mm-hmm. Like in those situations, like the money ain't going to buy that love. The money ain't going to buy that time. It ain't going to buy any of it. And I know I'm a way better worker when I know my kids are happy and my wife is happy, right? I can go a lot farther and do a lot more when I know that the people who are most important to me know that they're number one. And we talk about this now. My wife and I have something called the Bat Phone, right? I work a lot, you guys, but she gets the Bat Phone, right? If you remember like the old Batman series, mm-hmm. like Commissioner Gordon would pick that up, call Batman. You can't use the Bat Phone every single day for every single problem. Why? My wife knows that like she has the Bat Phone. If she picks that up, everything has to drop. And my job is to preserve that for her.
Mm. And that hit all five right there. I mean, and that was even the last one being, you know, grace, gratitude, and latitude, which we are often not kind enough, you know, to ourselves, and not allowing for the realization of the realities. Hey, you know, we made these choices, went down this path, but it didn't necessarily work or check the boxes that we thought it was going to, and everything comes at a cost. So let's fix it. Let's back up, you know, and go in a different direction and be kind to ourselves about it, and know that we can make it work in a different manner. And so it's interesting as you describe it, and there's similarities and everything there. Since I wrote my book and put my book out, I went deep into speaking. I had a lot of opportunities to go and speak and talk and build a website and the speaker's reel and did the whole thing. And I loved the entire process. Loved all the speaking stuff. But to your point, what I didn't love was I didn't love the traveling, because the traveling took me away. We have one son home. And I mentioned the one who's in Boulder. And right. We still have one son that's home. He's a sophomore in high school. So we're really called 2 years away from being empty nesters. Right. So after going out, I don't want to miss the games. There's only so much time left before we're empty. I don't want to miss the games. I don't want to not be home at the end of the school, all of these other things. I said, okay, we're going to pump the brakes on this a little bit. Not do it, but just be more selective about where I go, when I go, how often I go, you know, and go back to let's crawl, walk, run. You know, when we're empty nesters, we have a lot more opportunity.
Right.
Kate and I, so on and so forth. But for the next, you know, until Harper's out of the home, you know, similar thing to the booking bureau and everything. I'm just
you,
not.
You knew. And that time is so fleeting, right? It's like, my book back in 2013, by and large, was a book about intermittent fasting. Okay. Which, think about that. That's 9 years ago, right? And it's still a huge deal and arguably like bigger than ever. I didn't intermittent fasting for 6 years. I don't have anything bad to say about it other than like many of the claims are so overstated, that science is so twisted, that like it is a wonderful heuristic. It is a wonderful tool for everyone. It is not for everyone though. And it just doesn't do a lot of things, right? Like you can be in a caloric deficit and not intermittent fast and lose the exact same amount of fat as someone who would be intermittent fasting, right? There's like, there isn't any magic. The magic is in the boundaries itself, whatever those boundaries might be. I did it for 6 years. People always ask that, well, then why did you stop? And they expect me to have like some big breakthrough, or maybe I had a health problem. And it's like, no, none of that. I stopped because I became a dad and I was sitting there one day with my newborn and not eating breakfast with him. And I just thought, this is fucking stupid. Am I going to go the rest of my life never having breakfast with my son because of like something that is maybe making me live a little bit longer? But I'm like, but how much are these positive experiences and these social connections going to do for my health and my well-being? I'd argue it's going to do, you know, there's no study behind that, but I would argue like those memories, those moments, the importance of connectivity, especially with loved ones. That's the real cheat code in longevity. And I was like, and yeah, like some people are like, well, couldn't you just like change your fasting window? And I'm like, yeah, but then I'm not moving into like my own zone of genius. I am actually creating more friction because now I'm shifting, you know, I'm having an early breakfast and I'm cutting off, then I'm miserable. I'm never eating dinner with anyone. I'm not going to social events. I'm going to bed hungry. I train in the morning and and this is what things people are always like throwing off. We're like, we know what feels good. We know. And that doesn't always mean, right? People are like, well, then I feel good when I eat a brownie sundae. And I'm like, if you ate a brownie sundae 7 days a week, I promise you, you wouldn't feel good. You wouldn't. You actually would feel like shit. You know, it tastes good. You know, it's enjoyable. So don't cut that out completely. But you don't want to eat that every single day. You're going to feel gluttonous and terrible and sloppy and have no energy. Like, that's not true, right? You want it sometimes. So, okay, I need this thing sometimes. I needed those moments with my son. I know the type of father I wanted to be. And it was like, it was right there in front of me. And it was just like, okay, I'm going to do this. What else do I adjust then to have boundaries still in place to help me, as opposed to just feeling this need to be dogmatic about things that there is no need to be dogmatic about. Talk about it in the book, right? Idea of like, you can't screw this up. Every diet likes to claim that they're a lifestyle, but how many diets actually consider how you want to live? They tell you how to live. They don't consider how you want to live. And that's so paramount, because if you want to work in your own zone of genius, if you truly want to thrive, you have to have a picture of what you want your life to look like. And then you build the habits around those. And you don't build 100 of them at a time. In the book, I list 5 different tools. And I say, you don't have to apply these tools at all times. The goal is not to be 100%. The goal is to never be 0%. I say no 0% weeks. And that's really easy. It is very easy to not have a 0% week. You just can't like give the middle finger to like your week when like something goes wrong and stop doing things. If you're struggling, if you're overstressed, if you're underslept, just apply one of the tools, two of the tools. Do enough to stay afloat. Learn to tread water. I say that like, if you were to zoom out and like rate your weeks on how you feel, and I'm talking about like the fittest, healthiest people, the ones that you would look up to, I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that none of them are going to say 100% of the time, I'm feeling amazing. I wake up just ready to crush the gym every day. I always crave healthy food. Some people definitely crave them more than others because they built that habit, but no one wakes up that way. I would say it's more like 25% of the time they feel $1 million. A quarter of the time, they're like, I'm ready to go rage in PR. 25% of the time, they feel okay. They're like, yeah, I can do this. No, like no friction, but they're not feeling like just ready to go. And 50% of the time, they either feel like not that into it, or they kind of feel like shit. But the difference is the healthy people, that 50% of the time they're feeling like shit, they find a way to still do the healthy things, even if it's not at 100%, but they still clock in and they do it. And it's because they don't have they've got that, like, you can't screw this up mentality, right? The something is better than nothing. One tool is better than no tool. Two tools can be the equivalent of five tools if the alternative is doing no tools, right? And that's so much of what this is about, is like, we just romanticize what health looks like, and there's no need to do it. And that's what I want to change, because like, if people get in that position, it is a position of power. It is leverage. It is a competitive advantage to know that you're not always going to feel great. You don't always have to be 100%. And if you do a little bit, a lot of the time, and a lot of bit, a little bit of the time, you're going to be unstoppable.
The Midlife Mail podcast is brought to you in part by Human Improvement. Guys, as you know, I am extremely careful and conscious about what I put on my body and in my body. And when I find something that works, I stick to it. I have been trying out Human Improvement Protein for the last few months, and it has become my go-to everyday protein powder supplement, my exclusive everyday protein powder supplement. Why? Because it is the easiest to digest protein powder that I have found, and I have tried countless protein powders. Let me tell you something. There is not a shortage of protein powders on the market. So how do you cut through the clutter? How do you find the right one for you? Well, here's my criteria. I get a lot of protein through my everyday nutrition. I eat a considerable amount of meat. I really focus on real foods, and I supplement with protein powder. Supplement is in addition to what I am getting through my normal everyday nutrition, and I want to add and supplement a little bit more. I get 22 grams of organic protein from Human Improvement, 5 grams of healthy fiber, 0 grams of added sugar. The vanilla and the chocolate taste great, and most importantly for me, clean, easy to digest. So rather than that bloated, gassy, weighed down feeling that I get from most protein powders, with Human Improvement, I feel light, I feel satiated, I feel energized. It supports gut health, I'm building lean muscle, and it is a protein powder that actually makes me feel better. And I think it can do the same for you. So here's what you gotta do. Go on over to buyhi.co. That's buyhi.co. You're going to get 15% off using promo code MIDLIFEMALE. Check it out. Human Improvement, the best midlife male approved protein powder out there. And that's what consistency really looks like.
Yes.
You know, that we mistake it with intensity, or we mistake it for perfection, and that we have to string these perfect intense days together. Like you described earlier, it's like, I have to walk, and then I have to train, and then I have to cold plunge, and then I have to sauna, and then I have to measure my macros and calories. And it becomes, this is unsustainable. It's exhausting just listening to it.
Yeah. And if you do it, great, but do it from a position of like, I'm ready to do this, or I want this to do this, or I feel better when I do this. Mm-hmm. Not like I need to do all of these things to be healthy, right? Habit stacking is a real thing, but like, no one got healthier by like just sitting in a sauna and never eating well and never exercising. That's not what anyone's saying. The benefits of sauna are additive to other things and they will benefit you, but it's likely not a foundational thing. But if that ends up being the gateway, right? Sitting in a sauna makes you feel a little bit better. And that makes you want to eat a vegetable or go for a walk. Or do some exercise. It can be a foundational habit, because if that is what gives you the gateway to want to do better things for you, it can be. And that's the whole point, right? Like, we overcomplicate where it can start. And sometimes it is as simple as like, who am I? There's a big self-perception component here. Like, who am I? I'm a healthy individual. I haven't figured it out, right? People think like they can't consider themselves healthy until they're like lean and shredded and super healthy. No. That is the fallacy, because if you don't think you're healthy, you're going to have a hard time changing your behaviors because of cognitive dissonance. Your mind and your body are fundamentally at odds. Healthy people know that they care about health based on what they think about and what they want to achieve. So if you want to achieve something, if you want to be healthier, if you want to start a diet or an exercise program or read a book, It is evidence that you care about your health. And that is enough to know that, like, you can be a healthy person. You're just still in pursuit. You're still in the journey of building those behaviors. But don't sit there beating yourself up, being like, I'm not healthy. I'm so terrible. I'm so awful. I'm going to screw this up. I'm never going to figure it out. No, no, no. We're all on a journey. We're all at different points of the journey. You just got to realize that, like, you might be further back. Doesn't mean you're not getting there. You're going to get there if you think you're going to get there. But telling yourself how much you suck is a recipe for pretty much failure in anything in life.
Mm. One of the other things that has come out and that I really identify with also is this minimum effective dose. And I think, again, also far, far too often, we think in order to get maximum results, we need to obviously do the maximum. You think, and we forget or mistake, whatever word you adjective you want to throw in there, that often in a lot of ways, less is more. And that, why would I do 20 reps if 10 reps is going to get it done, you know, for me? If right. The law of diminishing return, or there's nothing, why would I not approach this again from a mindset of simplicity or efficiency and effectiveness, that more is not necessarily better?
Mm? Right.
And I got a lot of guys that struggle with this, that even come to me, because again, a lot of what they see looks like a lot more, looks like a lot of those days that you've described, looks like it's coming from a person with a body who looks a certain way, who's again, farther down the path of their journey. And we're all different genetically, health, like everything. And I think, you know, you talk about this too. I think you probably could give, you know, 10, 20, 50 people the exact same workout and exact same nutrition program and put them in it for as long as you want to. And they're all going to look different and right. respond differently,
exactly,
you know, to it. So I love this minimum effective dose. Can you screw that up too, or not? Would you talk about that a little bit?
You can't. The screwing up is being impatient and then beating yourself up for being impatient, right? The screwing up is the punishment. It's not the action. The screwing up is the emotional reaction, not the emotion itself, right? Again, no 0% weeks. You are going to fall off the wagon. You are going to have stress-filled weeks. You are going to miss workouts. You're going to eat things that are not perfectly healthy. Minimum effective dose is there to establish this idea that what you can do to be healthy, or more importantly, what you can do so that your body does not fight against you, is not that significant. I'll give you a perfect example. Sleep. Sleep is a big one. Sleep is a tough one because some people have multiple jobs, or they are shift workers, or they're caring for family, whoever it might be, or they're not good sleepers. Stress, anxiety, man, that will wreck your sleep really, really fast. A lot of people will talk about, like, how to optimize your sleep, and then they start listing off, you got to sleep 7.5 hours. You got to sleep 9 hours. You got to, you know, do a 17-step nighttime routine and, you know, get yourself in this mindset so you can, like, pass out. But for the person who struggles to sleep 3 to 4 hours a night and is working 2 jobs and working 7 days a week, not having a minimum effective dose can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you're like, I'm here. I need to be here. I don't see how to get there. Right. So much of this book I talk about, you know, if I were to steal another book title, this would be a 0 to 1 book for wellness. And 0 to 1 does not mean like I can't do anything right. 1 is the goal for many businesses and many bodies, because it is a position of power. It is stable footing. When you're at 1, you can do anything, right? Going 0 to 1 is the hardest thing to do. Going 1 to 10 is actually really easy comparatively, but, like, building those habits upon which you can stack is really tough. So the whole idea of this book was, like, I want people to thrive in every single way of their life and give them a fundamental guide to do that by helping them understand these minimums of, like, just avoid this bad stuff. So getting back to sleep, your minimum effective dose of sleep, and this isn't ideally what you would do or maximizing, it's 6 hours. And the reason why it's 6 hours is, like, below 6 hours, it's not that more than six hours doesn't make you feel better. Below 6 hours is when your body starts fighting against you. It makes it harder to lose fat. It makes it harder to build muscles. hormone shifts happen in your body. Your brain chemicals change, cognition change, memory gets worse, performance gets worse. Your incidence of stress goes up. Your incidence of heart disease and diabetes increase. Like, this is the line. And it doesn't mean that if you're getting 3 hours a night, I expect you to go to six like that. No. The goal is six. How are you building that bridge from where you are to where you want to be? And then giving people the tools to do that so they can incrementally do it. And when they do six for a week, for 2 weeks, for a month, for 6 months, then they can start saying, all right, how do I get to 6 hours and 45 minutes? Because ideally you're going to be sleeping in 45 minute increments. You're going to be adding those because that's what a sleep cycle is. And then maybe you'll get to 7.5 hours. And like, you got to understand that like all these people even know this stuff, don't figure it out. Guys, I don't get 7.5 hours of sleep every night. I'm stuck at like that 6:45 right now. That's where I'm at, but I'm really good at it. And I do not go below 6 hours unless like there's something extenuating, right? And there's going to be times when you're going to be less. New parents know this all the time, right? Like, you have a newborn, you're not going to be sleeping 6 hours a night. I promise you that. And I promise you that your body can sustain this. You can't screw this up. Put in the time, put in the effort to go through that phase, and then get back on the wagon as if like nothing was wrong, because our bodies are more resilient. You know, something else I talk about, you know, if you were to have a conversation about, you know, I'm going to tell you, you're going to do one workout a week or one workout a month. Do you expect that you're going to be in the best shape of your life? Of course not. And yet if we have one bad meal or one bad night of sleep, we act like everything is ruined. The same is correct and inverse, right? Like everything is done by, like you talk about, the consistencies of behaviors, knowing that our bodies are very resilient to withstand some of these temporary disruptions. So when they happen, don't freak out and then, you know, kind of screw it up by beating yourself up. It's kind of like being a closer in baseball, right? You show up there. They say the closer's got to have a short memory. You give up a home run, don't be beating yourself up, because then that next pitch is leaving yard, right? Wellness is the same way. It's okay to give up a home run every now and then. It truly is. It doesn't matter, right? Over the course of a season, over the course of a week, whatever, your ERA isn't going to matter. You just can't be like acting like every single screw up is the end of the world, that then those mistakes end up compounding. And that's where the real errors occur.
Well, I also think a lot of what you're saying is, look, it's all connected. And at various ages and stages of our lives, you know, we have different priorities, different obligations, different responsibilities. And we need to lean into those, lean into some at certain times more than others, and back out. And that's everything from, you talked about family to your fitness, which is your health, you know, and I talk about, you know, finance and your work and your whatever you got to earn, or whatever Right. You're learning and you're leaning into or leaning out of, and saying, this is just what it costs with more kids now in the house versus Right. less. Do I have to go here or there? Do I want to travel or not travel? If I can, what happens, you know, to it all. And then, you know, hey, like, what time do I want to enjoy myself and have fun? And what does that stuff look like? And if my kid leaves over half a pizza, I want to eat it, you know, or enjoy it with them. And like, for that range too, like, I think it dispels a lot of that all or nothing, you know, and Right. Again, allows for, hey, we're playing the long game, you know, here, and the cumulative kind of results of making better choices and decisions, really the majority of the time. Not all the time, but the Right. Majority of the time, under, again, kind of what success looks like for you, what your framework for wellness and health, you know, really, really looks like. Like, yeah, I'd give up, you know, two of my six abs, if you will, you know, or wherever you Right. Are for this. Or guess what? I don't want to have them at all. You know, you said fitness Right. Goals are, let me hang out around 175 pounds, a body fat of this, like, just kind of want to look good in a t-shirt, you know, or naked and not be injured. Like, those are great goals too.
Right. Yeah. You got to know what's important to you. You got to know what you want. And that's a part of the book too, right? That I talk about how the food environment is stacked against us. So most people's approach is to just fight against it. It doesn't work, right? Like, you can't fight against the food environment because it's not going away. So I try to teach people how to coexist with it, right? We're going to eat takeout. Mm. We're going to go to restaurants. And I'm not going to tell you to never order a bread basket, never get dessert, or get your entree and cut half of it. And you cut it in half and ask them to take half of it. This isn't sustainable behavior, right? It's just not. And if it is for you, congratulations, because like, you are one of the few. I do want people to be able to like eat out and not stress about it every single time and think that it's going to disrupt their health. You can't eat out every single day. You can't have ultra processed foods all the time, right? They are problematic, but like so many things, poison is in the dose, right? And if you know that you can have it, and if you learn how to enjoy it and appreciate it, you will crave it less. So much of our cravings are based on the fact that we do not appreciate and enjoy when we are in that moment because we're too busy stressing about it. So then you didn't enjoy it, and then you even crave it more, as opposed to like, man, when you have something great that happens, whether you're at a sporting event or a life event with your family, or you're eating just an amazing meal and you're just in it and just enjoying it and truly not feeling bad about it, you're satisfied. And like satisfaction is a funny thing because like satisfaction is very closely linked to this idea of gratitude, where you can just like appreciate and be happy that you got it and then move on. Right? You don't have that need for more, that greed, I will say. And then you don't crave it as much. And then like you learn that, oh, I can have this sometimes and it's fine, right? I can have the things that I love as long as I'm not gluttonous about it. But the key is when I am gluttonous about it, enjoy it. Because doing otherwise just means that like you kind of wasted the bullet in the chamber. Like here was your dessert. And instead of enjoying it, you stressed about it. And it was just a meal. It was just one meal. And you would have been way healthier enjoying it with it, enjoying the moment with your friends or whatever. And then getting back to those foundational habits, which in the part of the foundational habit is allowing you to live your life. Mm. If something that you are doing that is supposed to be healthy for you creates so much stress that you cannot enjoy your life and feel good in your own skin, I would argue it's not healthy at all.
And there it is. So, so good. Adam, where do people find you? How do they get in touch with you? How do they get a copy of the book? Because this is just gold, man. This is awesome stuff.
You can find me on all social at Born Fitness. And for the book, you know, it's sold pretty much everywhere. But if you want, I've got a bunch of bonuses attached to it because when people buy a book, I appreciate it. This is a 9-year process. And as much as, you know, I can make it that people win and get added value, that to me is always a winning strategy in business. So you can go to can'tscrewthisup.com, can'tscrewthisup.com, and you will see that when you buy one book, you get a whole bunch of bonuses. If you buy two books, because I believe that part of being healthy is doing something for yourself and doing something for others. Some of the best things that I've ever been is when I've been gifted books by others. So I love the idea of buying one for yourself, buying one for a friend, and giving the gift of health. You do that, there are a lot more bonuses. And I think the biggest bonus of all, if you buy two books, there you get entered into a competition where I'm going to fly people out to Los Angeles to train with me and Arnold. So we're going to be doing workouts at Gold's. And that's just one more way I always say that. I mentioned this in my acknowledgments. I believe life is about people and experiences. Meet good people. We'll have good experiences. Go to good experiences. You'll probably meet good people. So I would be hypocritical if I didn't create some amazing experiences attached to this book. And that is just my little way of giving back, saying thank you, and trying to create an experience for everyone that decides to support the book.
That is awesome. Guys, take him up on that right now. You can't screw this up. Why eating takeout, enjoying dessert, and taking the stress out of dieting leads to weight loss that lasts. Great title. And the foreword is by Arnold as well. Jump on all of those offers that Adam put out there. Adam, thank you so much for being on the Midlife Male podcast today. I really appreciate it. Sco Buffs, I'll see you in Boulder at a game, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Out there.
I cannot wait, Greg. I cannot wait. Thank you for having me today.
You got it. Hang tight. Guys, if you like what you have heard on the podcast, and I know you had to this week especially, give us that 5-star rating, leave us a positive review, and share the Midlife Male podcast with everyone. You know, keep the Midlife Male movement growing. Thank you so much. Until next week, I'm out of here. If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midlifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.